Well, hello everybody again.
Hello.
Nice to be back, I'll tell you. Since we saw you the last time, we put a few thousand miles on our vehicles and a few tons of stuff. But between all that moving and then having gone up to the home office, we spent 2 days in, what do they call it, review? Pastoral training. We all got a chuckle out of that after 45 years in the ministry, but it was very, very helpful. It was nice to know what we're supposed to do. for a change. And, so we spent 2 days in that, and then we had Friday was a break, and then we had the General Conference of Elders following that. So that kept us busy for the best part of the week. And then we have finally got into our house. I'm not saying we're settled yet, okay, but we are in a house. We've been in motel rooms for the last who knows how long, and they kept promising, well, you will sign tomorrow. Well, tomorrow came and went, and I said, we'll sign tomorrow. And tomorrow came and went, and we finally signed on Thursday this week. And guess what? They sent the money. We couldn't close until the lenders actually sent the money to pay this executive. Well, it was an estate. And they would not settle until they saw the cash in hand. And guess what, when the money came, at 4:31, when the banks were supposed to close at 4:30, so they made a few more dollars interest, I guess, I don't know, but the money came from California, you know those fruits and nuts out there. But they finally got the check there, and hope we don't have any more trouble with them being our mortgage carriers. I hope it works out okay, but I think it will. They are really tough on lending money in this day and age. They go through everything, and they know more about me than I know about myself. They know more about the Church of United Church of God than I know. They know more about why I came back to United. And it was confusing, I will say that. It must have been confusing to them, say, having been employed by Worldwide Church for all these years, and then being retired for a few years, and now you're coming back with United Church of God. What's all this stuff going on, you know? So they wanted to know what caused the breakup. Why did you go this, they go that way? Why did you go? I didn't think it was any of their business, but anyway. But still, they know now. Okay. Oh, well. I think what really got them is why would 71-year-olds want to go back into full-time ministry. Why are you doing this, you know? And might be a good question. No. And we kept saying, because we wanted to, and because they needed full-time ministers. So, but that doesn't always turn out to be to their satisfaction. So there's been a lot of things going under the bridge. So, but we are really happy to be in our house. The only bad part about it is it's a nice home, but a bachelor's been living there for the last how long?
Probably 15 years
since his parents died, and it was an estate. I don't think he's cleaned anything for the last 15 years. No, he swept the floor, I think, once in a while. But we've had to do some major cleaning, and the yard's going to need some major work done on it. It's just been left grow up, you know, all the underbrush and all kinds of stuff that hadn't been taken care of. So We wanted a fixer-upper so we could have plenty to do. We got it. So we'll work at it. But do appreciate all your prayers that God did intervene and it did work things out for us. Maybe not exactly when we would have liked, but I look at it as probably when it was the best. And looking back on it, I'm sure we'll find some reasons why God didn't allow us allow it to close before he did. And but wedging that in with trying to take care of a general conference of elders and all of the rest of those things, it really has been quite an interesting. What's the last time we were? 3 weeks ago? Something like that. Maybe a month ago. Anyway, I don't have a lot of other announcements I wanted to give, but what I want to do today is, since we did have a conference of elders and a training program, both of them were putting great stress and emphasis upon the mission that we have as a church and as a ministry. We were told over and over and over again as ministers how we should behave, how we should act, how we should treat people. And we all felt for the first time as we were in the conference that everybody was in agreement, that everybody was there to recognize the problems we've been through, the difficulties we've been through, but the ones at home office are unified. They are at one. There is no major opposition. As Victor Kubik said and Dennis Luker both said, when they walk into the office in the mornings, they go with excitement and with a sense of peace and a desire to go and do some work. Whereas for the last number of years, some of it has almost been, I have to go to the office. I don't really want to go. You know, I don't want to really be there because there was so much tension going on and friction. And I'm not blaming anybody for it. I'm just saying that there was some differences of opinion. I'm not here, standing here at all today, saying that everything the United Church did and said and acted was right. And I'm not saying that everything that COGWA, I guess that's their official name now, that everything that those men said and did was incorrect. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying that, as Amos says, unless two can walk together, how can two walk together except to be in agreement? You know, when you got tension, things do not get accomplished. They just do not get solved and they do not get worked out. And so our mission statement, which will be on those little stickies that you will pick up, is serving as Christ serves. Now, a lot of thought went into that. First of all, it was serving as Christ served. And we all decided that Christ isn't through serving yet, is he? So it should not be in the past tense. It should be in the present tense that Christ is still serving, isn't he? Serving the church, serving his people. And therefore, we are serving as Christ serves and is serving. And we need to all understand how Christ does serve. And it's the key to Christian behavior. It's the key to understanding what we are doing. And so that vision statement of Christ serving and the servant-centered leadership is major importance. So I want to look at briefly what is the biblical content of Christ-centered or Christ service, serving us and we serving his people. And there are four main points that I want to bring out. First of all, is that number one, that humility And it's only humble people who will be in God's kingdom. It's the only ones that will be there. I'm going to turn back to Matthew chapter 18. And I know we read these scriptures and we may even think we understand them. And I have thought I understood it, but there's always more that you need to go back and really think about when we have this example of what Christ is doing and what he will do. That he wants humble people in his family. That he wants humble people that will not be tempted. And so he said in verse 1, at the same time the disciples came, the disciples to Jesus, saying, "Who is the greatest in the kingdom of heaven?" And all of us have had plenty of that in our lifetimes, of this squabbling, arguing like little kids. I'm greater than you, right? Or I'm more important than you, or my daddy's better than your daddy. You know, it started very early in our lives, didn't it? That everybody has some elements of this. But Jesus was telling his disciples, because they came and they were asking, who's the greatest in the kingdom of heaven? And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them. Now, I can't prove it, but I would think this child was a pretty small child. In order to illustrate the point, I'm convinced he had to be pretty young, because children get beyond that pretty fast, right? Don't they? They can start showing rebellion, they can start showing resentment, they can start showing their human nature very early. I'm not saying how early, I don't know how early. I think some of mine from day one, but no. No, they were nice kids. But it doesn't take long. So I'm pretty sure it was a fairly small child that Jesus may have actually gone out and picked this little baby up in his arms and put him there, put this child there in front of these disciples and said, okay, you want to argue about who's greatest? If you want to argue about who's most important, let me show you. And he held this little, maybe, what, a year old? Said, here's the most important. This is what you need to be like. This is how you ought to be acting. Here's how you ought to be showing your honor of God. And so he took this little child and he set him in the midst of them and he began to explain. And Jesus called a little child unto him and set him in the midst of them and he said, truly I say to you, and this is why it's so important, brethren, I say unto you that unless or except you be converted and you become as little children. So it's a process, isn't it? Being converted is one part of it. Becoming as little children is another part of the whole equation. The two are not synonymous. But you cannot become as a little child unless you are converted. All right? You have to be converted, and then God, with his power and his spirit, can begin to work the miracle of helping us see who we really are. Except you be converted and you become as little children, you shall not enter into the kingdom of heaven. So it's a critical point. People might say, well, let's get off of this humility stuff. I mentioned one other time that when we first began to think about the direction in which we wanted the church to go, and this was about 3 or 4 years ago, that we wanted to have a direction that was entitled Christ-centered, Christ-like, servant-centered leadership. And there was such a big uproar over that whole concept that it was put on the back burner. It wasn't even allowed to go forward because there were those who felt that is Protestant. That is just pure and pure Protestantism. Well, my question is, what is Protestant about being Christ-like? What is Protestant about being servant-centered leadership? Or having Christ, or serving as Christ serves, which we finally boiled it down to. What's Protestant about that? Or what's not biblical about that? I don't know of anything that's not biblical about having the attitude of serving as Christ serves. So only, I'm underscore only humble people will be in God's kingdom. And that goes for me. That goes for Dennis Luker. That goes for Victor Kulik. That goes for Melvin Rhodes. It goes for all of the Council of Elders, by the way, which we is quite a changed Council of Elders now. Did they send all those out yet? Everybody got that. Because of one change that was made by resolution was that only you could not serve on the Council of Elders and on the Administrative Board at the same time. So by passing that, Victor Kubik is no longer on the Council of Elders because he is also on the Administrative Board, right? And a couple of, one other one, who's the other one?
Aaron Dean.
Was taken off of the Council of Elders because he, again, is the treasurer and he's on the administration. They were replaced by a couple of others who were runner-ups. And it was just interesting, the way it turned out is that we had already put a couple of others on the board, or had not put a couple of others on the board because it was all full. So these runner-ups, when the resolution was passed, two of them were removed and these other two were put back on the board. So that's the way we came up with 12 that are there at the present time, including John Elliott is one of them. Who's the other? Can't even remember now. Gary Antion was there, I think.
Don Ward.
Don Ward, that's it. Don Ward. I got his name right in front of me. But Don Ward was put on there. And he's been around for years. Okay, so the first critical point that we need to understand is that to be in God's kingdom, and I think that's what we are all striving for, that's what we all want to be, is in God's family and God's kingdom, that is going to require humility. Now, humility can be a lot of things in a lot of circumstances, but one thing it isn't is making ourselves important. It is making ourselves recognize that we are unimportant in the big scheme of things. Going over to Matthew chapter 20 then, in Matthew the 20th chapter, and verse 25. Again, he said, "But Jesus called them unto him and said, you know that the princes of the Gentiles exercise dominion over them, and that they that are great exercise authority upon them." In other words, people in authority over who have rulership and dominion, we're kind of thumbs down on people, right? Pressing down on them, putting them. Well, you will do it because I tell you to do it. Or you will do it because I have authority over you. And they get things done. I'm not here to say they can't get things done, but are they getting things done God's way or are they doing things man's way? In a way that human beings, man wanted a king, who, didn't he? Rather than having God rule over him. And so he says, verse 26, "But it shall not be so among you. But whosoever will be great among you, let him be your minister or your servant." Or in one term, your slave. That's what one of the doulos means, slave. "And whoever will be chief among You let him be your servant. That's why we have foot washing at the Passover. It's to illustrate that point, right? That nobody is beyond washing the feet of somebody else. I don't care who it is. That I can wash the feet of, well, just because he's no greater than anybody else, but let's just say Melvin Rhodes, who is chairman of the council. And he would wash my feet. And it's a matter that he's not above. We are all in this thing together. Does he have a certain job? You bet he has a job to do. And I have a job to do. And so leadership has to be, and I'll get more to that later on, but we have to learn some things about how to properly lead, properly shepherd, and properly instruct the people of God, according to what Christ says here in Matthew. But it shall not be so among you, but whoever shall be great among you, let him be your minister. And whoever will be chief among you, let him be your servant. Even as the Son of Man came, not to be ministered to. And if anybody showed humility, when Jesus could have called a million angels to serve him at any time in his life, that he could have had servants by the galore, he didn't even have a home to call home. He didn't have any place, he said, to lay his head, did he? He said, foxes have holes, birds have nests, but I don't even have a place to lay my head. And here was God himself who became a human being who was willing not even to have a home after he had lived in splendor and glory for all eternity before with all the holy angels about him, with the sun shining in its greatness, he and his father, and yet he gave that up and he became just another human being when he came down to this earth because he had a mission. He could have. How would many people in this world do that if they were to take on that job and that mission? Well, I want a 15-room mansion. For a good example is, how did Gaddafi, how does he live? Does he have a home? Yeah, he has a pretty nice home. A whole complex. He has, you know, if you've never been in the Middle East, they have some very nice houses over there. It's not like living in, you know, a tent city. They use marble. They have all kinds of beautiful things. And so what about old Hussein? He had a pretty fancy houses, and I'd heard one time that he had something like 15 different palaces scattered around. See, that's what Christ is showing, is that's the Gentile way. Hey, if I'm going to be your leader, here's how I'm going to be, right? I am going to have the nicest house, the nicest car, with the nicest income, and with the most wives. Okay. They all seem to fit that in there too. But God says when Christ came and gave up his position to become our Savior, it says he didn't even have a place to call his own. Even as the Son of Man came not to be ministered to, but to minister. He was here to give of himself, to serve everybody that needed serving, from the leper that was considered an outcast and wasn't even willing to be talked to the Samaritan woman that he met by the well, you remember, on his way to Samaria, that the Jews said had nothing to do with. They weren't even allowed to talk to them first. The only time a Jew could respond to a Samaritan was if the Samaritan said something first. Then they could respond. But they were not allowed to speak first. And so when the disciples saw Jesus talking to this, not just any Samaritan, but a Samaritan woman by the well. So you've got both things. A man talking to a woman, a strange woman, there by the well, as well as being a Gentile. But Christ didn't consider it hard. He didn't consider that below his position or his dignity. And so if you read the account there in the book of John, they seem to be having a pretty interesting conversation, didn't they? And as they were talking to each other. So much so that he was telling her all the things that she had done in her life. And said, how did you know? How do you know all that about me? And then she went back into the village and was telling people, hey, I've met this man there by the well who told me everything I've ever done. And the witness went on back to the village, and as you read the rest of the account, any number of other people became part of the Church of God because of his willingness to sit there by the well talking to a Samaritan woman. Coming on down, and then it says, verse 28, even as the Son of Man came and not to be ministered unto, but to minister and to give his life a ransom for many. And that last statement is pretty important, because really that's what all of us need to ask ourselves sometimes. Are we going to be willing to give our lives as a ransom? As a ransom. And there is coming a time, brethren, and this is why humility is so important. There is coming a time when you and I may be called upon, as Christ was called upon, to lay your life down for another person. It may come. And I can almost guarantee it will come. Not every one of us will have to die, but sooner or later we are going to go through some major, major difficulties. And the attitude is going to have to be, are we willing to lay our lives down as a ransom for many? So it is very important that we recognize the example that is set here. Back in Matthew chapter 16. Matthew 16 and verse 24 and 25. And then said Jesus to his disciples, if any man will come after me, if we're going to be Christians and followers of Christ, he says, if anybody wants to be my disciple or a Christian who is like me, he said, let him deny himself and take up his cross and follow me, or do as I do, he says. And then, for whoever will save his life shall lose it. And whoever will lose his life for my sake shall find it. You have to be willing to lose your life. Now, please don't get me wrong. I'm not putting my name on the top of the list of martyrs. I have no desire to do that. But you know, I would imagine Stephen didn't have any desire to do that either. But he was so full with the gospel message there in Acts chapter 7, so filled with the Spirit of God that he went on a preaching binge that wound up in getting his life taken, didn't it? So in one sense, he laid his life down as a ransom for all those people that were there, that they might be eventually converted. For what is a man profited if he shall gain the whole world and lose his own life? Or what shall a man give in exchange for his soul? For the Son of Man shall come in the glory of his Father with his angels, and then he shall reward every man according to his works. In the Amplified version of the Bible, it says here in this verse that we must lose our life in the kingdom of God. We must lose our life in the kingdom of God. That's what we have to do. Humility is absolutely vital to us being in God's family. Point number two, it is essential for having an effective ministry. And you have a ministry as well as I do, all right? I have a ministry. You have a ministry. All ministry has to be based upon humility. It is essential for having an effective relationship. I don't care what the relationship is, whether it's marriage or whether it's a master-slave relationship or whether it's a employee-employer relationship. All relationships, which is a ministry, all will have to be effective only, or can only be effective by that ingredient called humility. Now, so down through the years, and I've been around for a good many years, down through the years, I've seen a lot of people fail in our ministry because of not having a humble attitude. A lot of people who were great ministers, they were great individuals. They were had lots of talents, had lots of abilities. Unfortunately, a lot of the very capable men who have been in God's ministry down through the years have failed because they did not have a humble attitude. They just were not willing to serve as they should have been willing to serve. And they were not willing to become as that little child that Christ set in the midst of the disciples. And a lot have failed when they could have been successful. Back in the book of 1 Peter chapter 5, 1 Peter chapter 5, we got preached at a lot over up there for those 5 days. On a manner of attitude, a manner of behavior, a manner of our relationship to God, our relationship to one another, our relationship to the members. And that's the way the church is going. The church is headed in that direction of Christ-centered servant relationship. No longer are we going to tolerate this, I'm the big shot who's going to tell everybody else where they can go and when they can come and what color of car they can buy. None of my business, actually, what color of car you drive. Just don't drive a black one. No. No, for years and years, it was a... for boats, let's put it that way, for ministers to drive black cars. We just weren't allowed to. And you might ask, why was that? Well, why was that? Is that because that was the color of car Mr. Armstrong drove. And since Mr. Armstrong was driving a black car, we didn't want any other ministers coming with black cars. Totally ridiculous. But that was just one illustration and not even probably the best one, but it showed the attitude of this make-believe humility because somebody else has something, you have to not do it. That makes you humble? No, it doesn't make you humble. I can be just as carnal driving a red car. Okay, as I can be driving a black car. It had nothing to do with what was up here, does it? But we made a big deal out of it. Neither could we drive certain kinds of cars. We could not drive certain makes of vehicles. But especially if the minister had one better than, you know, you had to make sure you stayed underneath that. I'll never forget one time when Mr. Ducat, and this is not to put him down or anything, it was just the way things are, but we had one of those big area get-togethers, services, where about 5,000 people there, I think, in Stockton, California. Mr. Ducat came up, and one of the local ministers there had rented a car, and he went out and rented a big Cadillac. And so when he came to the services, I remember to this day Mr. Ducat saying, "Well, what minister's driving that big Cadillac out there?" Thankfully, I could say, "Not me." Not me. No, it was just so ridiculous because we put emphasis upon the little things and we lacked emphasis on the major things. We emphasized things that were unimportant and we diminished things that were very important. And so it says here in 1 Peter chapter 5, and picking it up in verse 1 and 2, he says, "The elders which are among you I exhort, who am also an elder, and a witness of the sufferings of Christ, and also a partaker of the glory that shall be revealed. Feed the flock of God which is among you, taking the oversight thereof, not by constraint, but willingly, not for filthy lucre, but of a ready mind. Neither as being lords over God's heritage, but being examples to the flock. And when the chief shepherd shall appear, you shall receive a crown of glory that fades not away. And so we find here the way leaders should be examples. Now, I hope all of us recognize that your leaders are human beings. And as human beings, we will not always do things right. We may not always be the perfect example of doing things God's way. But I do guarantee you one thing, that the direction the church is going is that we want to do it the right way. We want to be there to serve you. Day or night, we want to be there to help you through your trials, through your tests, through your difficulties, to be supportive of you, to help you, and to be one of you. Just one of you. Over in 1 Corinthians chapter 1, and back in the book of 1 Corinthians, I've already had one person come to me and say, because of some situations, say, "Well, anybody that doesn't obey those in authority over them, it's rebellion." And I said, "No, it isn't. No, it isn't. It's not always rebellion if people get their backs up on some things, is it? And if you start calling everybody a rebel and a rebellious attitude, you're going to wind up with all kinds of more difficulties and a lot of hardships." But we'd been talking about the direction the church is going, and he says, "But there has to be authority." Yes, there does. The right kind of authority, the right kind of power that we will find. But it says here in 1 Corinthians, or actually 2 Corinthians, pardon me, if I said first, I meant second. In 2 Corinthians chapter 1 and verse 24, "Not for that we have dominion over your faith." Now, what does that really mean? If you stop and break that down, in terms of members and ministry, what would you say that having dominion over your faith, what would that include? What would we be doing that might say, not that we have dominion over your faith, but are helpers of your joy? For by faith you stand. It's not by my authority and dominion over your life that you stand. It is by your faith that you stand before God. Our job is to be helpers of your joy, helpers of your relationship with God, which is the only way you're ever going to have joy. Anyway, is by your relationship to God. And we'll get to that in a couple of weeks when I come back, is the vital importance of yours and my relationship to God. All else is unimportant when it really breaks it all down. Unless you have a right relationship with God and your faith is in Christ and in God, all else is burnable, it's destructible. That's the one thing that will endure. In 2 Corinthians chapter 2, just over a page here, in the second chapter, verse 4, "For out of much affliction and anguish of heart I wrote unto you with many tears, not that you should be grieved, but that you might know the love which I have more abundantly unto you." And even Paul had such a great desire to show his love for them that he wanted to help them to be able to be joyful. Well, big point number 3 then, it is humility is essential. It's essential for building spiritually healthy members and minister-member relationships. It's essential. Over in Ephesians chapter 4, Ephesians the 4th chapter, Paul has a lot to say about this subject. In Ephesians the 4th chapter, verse 1, "I therefore, the prisoner of the Lord, beseech you that you walk worthy of the vocation wherewith you are called." And your calling is of to the greatest vocation that you could possibly ever be given. And we all need to ask ourselves frequently, are we walking worthy of that vocation? Our behavior, our attitudes, our relationships, and whatever else, are we walking worthy of it? "With all lowliness and meekness, with long suffering, forbearing one another in love." Now, I've read a definition of humility one time in a book, and I can't even remember what the title of the book was, but the definition always struck me is that humility is your ability to your ability to glory in the differences of other people. That's the way it was. That you could glory in the uniqueness of another human being. Now, what upsets most of us with other human beings sometimes is their oddities, their unusual qualities, or whatever else it might be. But God says that we need to have the ability through humility, which comes from God, that we can actually glory in that unique quality that that other person has. That's what makes them unique. That's what makes them who they are, right? And we should really ask who gave them that unique quality in the first place. Because when you really give them the honor for that uniqueness, what you're really doing is honoring God for giving it to them. Our unique qualities. So he says that we all, with lowliness and meekness and with long suffering, forbearing one another in love, endeavoring to keep the unity of the Spirit and the bond of peace. And that's what we heard a lot. We're going to be preaching a lot, that we maintain the unity of the Spirit in the bond of peace. In the bond of peace. Coming down to verse 11. shows where he gave some apostles and some prophets and all the rest of these positions, teachers, pastors, evangelists, and all of them, whatever their position, is for the perfecting of the saints, for the work of the ministry, for the edifying of the body of Christ. And each one of you has a quality that you need to be using, a talent that you can use as a minister also, that we can all come to the fullness of the measure, or the measure of the stature of the fullness of Christ, that we might grow up into Christ and be like Him. So with God's help, we as God's people must become more and more like Christ. Be Christians, okay? That's a novel idea. Be a Christian. Be like Christ. And finally, big point number four, the need for humility, is that it is essential for healing hurts, for the healing of the hurts of the past, for healing any hurts in the present, and to heal and help heal the hurts of the future. It's the way things are healed in husband-wife relationships. It's the way things are healed in member-minister relationships. It's the way things are healed in member-member relationships. Have you ever asked yourself what the word forgive really means? The word forgive? Actually, it comes from two words, for, give. Which means that if you forgive somebody, you will be able to give as you did before. Now that's forgiveness. That you can have the same attitude and relationship and the desire to help and serve that person before they maybe had a strife or some problem, that you had a certain good relationship. Then a problem came. Then when you forgave that person, you should be able to have that same relationship now that you had before. Not this, well, I'll forgive, but I'm certainly not going to forget. You know, that doesn't do it. That's not forgiveness. You never forgave in that case, right? He didn't forgive. Christ, how would you like Christ to do that to you and me? Well, I forgave you of that sin that you committed, but it's still in the back of my mind waiting for the day of judgment. No, He's not waiting for it. It's gone. Forgotten. And He can have a relationship that He had before by forgiveness. So it's essential for healing the hurts. Be willing to talk. Be willing to have that attitude. Philippians chapter 3. Philippians, the third chapter. And verses 13 and 14. Brethren, I count not myself to have apprehended, but this one thing I do, forgetting those things which are behind, and reaching forth unto those things which are before, I press toward the mark of the prize of the high calling of God in Christ Jesus. Let us therefore, as many as be perfect, be thus minded. And if in anything you be otherwise minded, God shall reveal even this unto you. So we have to go forward. We have to be willing to change. Over in chapter 4, Philippians chapter 6, or chapter 4, verse 6, be careful for nothing, but in everything by prayer and supplication with thanksgiving, let your requests be made known to God. And the peace of God, which passes all understanding, shall keep your hearts and your minds through Jesus Christ. It's that peace which God gives to us. It will pass all of our understanding, but it will bring about unity and harmony and peacefulness. Back in Ephesians 4, verse 31 and 32. And I'll let this be the end of this. But he says, let all bitterness. Now that that says a lot. Anytime you see those three letters, A-L-L, it's pretty hard, isn't it? That's difficult. Let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and all evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. Now, that's setting a pretty high goal. If we can accomplish even a part of that, we'll be going on for a long way. But then he tops that by saying in verse 32, and be you kind one to another. If there's one thing I want to see as a mark of the Lewistown Church of God, it is that we are kind to one another. Be kind to one another. Tender-hearted. Now, there's some obvious difference there between being kind and being tender-hearted. Very close, but might be a good study to find out. Forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, has forgiven you. So as we, as a church, from home office and from all of the directions we are receiving, go forward as this servant serving as Christ serves, can we go forward with that attitude to one another? That attitude toward me, toward you, toward each other, and the relationships that we have in any other area of life, with humility, with humbleness of mind, putting others higher than ourselves, putting others on a better and more important position than what we are, and that we let nothing be done out of evil speaking and bitterness, but that we are kind. Kind doesn't mean that you cannot help. Kind does not mean that you roll over like there's nothing you can do to help somebody. Kind is that you have a genuine, deep-seated feeling for that person, that you want to help, assist, give comfort to, strengthen. And we all want to see each other in God's kingdom, right? So can we be kind, gentle, loving, mature, forbearing, and all those other good qualities of God's Spirit mentioned in Galatians 5, that we can all grow and become more and more Christ-like as we serve Him in a Christ-like attitude.